Welcome to the New York Outdoor News Great Northeast Podcast. Every 2 weeks, we explore news and issues affecting hunters, anglers, and conservation across the northeastern United States. If you enjoy the content here, be sure to subscribe to our print or digital versions by calling 800-535-5191 or visit our website at outdoornews.com. Now, here's your host and a man who claims he's immune to buck fever, New York Outdoor News editor Dan Ladd.
This episode of the Great Northeast Podcast is brought to you by the Family Forest Carbon Program, a collaborative initiative created by two nonprofit organizations, the American Forest Foundation and the Nature Conservancy, assisting landowners in improving the health of their land with long-term sustainable forest management practices while providing guaranteed annual income. Learn more at familyforestcarbon.org. Greetings and welcome to the Great Northeast Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Ladd, editor of New York Outdoor News. Happy to be along, happy to have you along, as we're just about to cross the midpoint in the month of February here. And that means Valentine's Day. Hey, happy Valentine's Day out there to all you folks who have someone to spend some time with. Hope you're able to get out and do that this coming weekend and next week while the kids are out of school. They've got their winter break. And, you know, that invokes a memory real quick here. I remember many years ago, I'm going to go all the way back to the winter of 1981. I'm dating myself here, but I was in high school back then, and my brother and I started out the winter break snowmobiling with our father. We ended the winter break throwing a baseball on grass. If you kind of look at some of the weather records, the temperature records, in this part of the country, in the middle part of February 1981, that's when you'll see that a lot of them were broken. I'm talking like 60-degree days, things like that. We experienced a lot of that back then. And again, we went from winter activities to spring activities that year. And my point is, it's starting to warm up out there a little bit right now. We've had quite a stretch, obviously. I don't have to tell you how cold it's been here in the North Country, all around the Northeast. And finally, we're starting to see some temperatures go above freezing. The good news is it sounds like there's quite a bit of ice out there. I have not been on the ice yet. I do intend to get out next week. That is in the plans. Have been on the skis a little bit, but looking forward to getting some ice fishing in. And I'm kind of glad it's warming up a little bit because that sub-zero stuff just doesn't do it for me. What else is going on? We've got some small game seasons winding down a little bit. Here in New York, they're still hunting for ruffed grouse and squirrels and cottontail rabbits and even ringneck pheasants. But the snowshoe hare season continues into March. Coyotes, other states have varying seasons. But in New York, we've got some of the seasons in some parts of the state are continuing on and through the end of February and well into March. With that, it's also the show season. Busy time of year, especially on the weekends for us. We've got a lot going on. We're going to be at the Adirondack Outdoorsman Show. That's in Johnstown at the Moose Lodge, February 21st and 22nd. In fact, I intend on visiting that one myself, kind of in the southern Adirondacks. Meanwhile, retired New York Outdoor News editor Steve Pyatt, you can catch up with him at the Empire State Outdoor Sportsman Show, February 20 to 22nd. That's down in Suffern, Rockland Community College. And if you're in Western New York or Pennsylvania, that area, you want to check out the Greater Niagara Fishing Expo at Niagara Falls Convention Center. Niagara Falls Convention Center, February 19th to 22nd. And you'll run into a couple guys out there from New York Outdoor News, particularly probably Bill Hills Jr. and maybe Frank Campbell, who helps us out with our fishing reports. Hey, we've got a great guest lined up for you here on the Great Northeast Podcast. We've got attorney Paloma Capanna coming back. This, I think, is her third time joining us. And, of course, she's involved with so many of the gun rights cases, the ones that are challenging the New York State Rifle and Pistol Association versus Bruin case from 2022. Of course, that started a flurry of gun laws, particularly in New York, the Concealed Carry Improvement Act, and so much that poses for challenges for us gun owners in New York. But Paloma's been working with a whole number of plaintiffs here. A couple cases she's closer to than others, but she's up to speed on all of them. So we're looking forward to having that conversation with her and getting you up to speed as much as possible when we come back right after this.
Your land is your legacy. But keeping it healthy and thriving means caring for it now and in the future. The Family Forest Carbon Program can help you do right by your land with guaranteed income, help developing a forest management plan, and advice from experts. If you own 30 acres or more of forest land in Vermont, Massachusetts, or New York, you may be eligible to enroll in the Family Forest Carbon Program. Visit familyforestcarbon.org and enroll today.
Welcome back to the Great Northeast Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Ladd, editor of New York Outdoor News, and we're going to try to get caught up on some of these firearms lawsuits here in New York. And we know it can be head-spinning, and it sure certainly probably is, even for the attorney we have here who deals with all this. We want to welcome Paloma Cabana. How you doing, Paloma? Great to have you back. We've had you on the podcast a couple times, but it's been a while. So it's looking forward to circling back with you today and hearing about all the wonderful things you're involved in. But the first thing I got to ask is, are you in the Adirondacks or are you someplace where it's warm?
Well, just at the moment, I'm in the southern Outer Banks of North Carolina, where it is not warm. We had our first official blizzard ever in the state of North Carolina 2 weekends ago and took 34 inches in 36 hours.
Whoa. Yeah, I got some friends who went to Florida just in time for it to be cold down there, and they got picked on that they brought the weather with them.
Yeah, I'm not taking the blame for this.
But you're obviously connected with everything up here. And just before we got going this morning, you had an email that you distributed, which I have not had a chance to fully read, but it's a tell-all type of email on the ammunition background check and the court case in California and New York. So let's start there. What's going on?
We started the Gazzola versus Hochul lawsuit in November 2022, but it wasn't until December 2025 that the state of New York motioned to dismiss our claims under Bruin against the New York State ammunition background check system and the semi-automatic rifle license. In the meantime, there's been a lot of litigation out in California under the Rode v. Bonta case. The lead plaintiff out there is Kim Rode, an Olympic gold medalist. They started their lawsuit ahead of the 2022 laws that hit New York. California does love to be first in the nation for a Second Amendment on constitutional laws. They've had judge after judge declare the system unconstitutional, and the state of California just won't relent. They will have oral arguments again in Rode v. Bonta on March 23, 2026 at the full Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. I look for a victory there for the plaintiffs and the state of California to then petition the United States Supreme Court to review the issue. What's interesting, though, about the timing on Gazzola versus Hochul and ammunition background check is we might be just what they need. One of the best ways to get to the U.S. Supreme Court is split circuit decisions. So if we say that the Ninth Circuit probably comes back with a shot down of the California ammunition background check system, I think in our case, Gazzola versus Hochul, it's probably 50-50 whether our district court judge will support the New York ammunition background check system or take it down. Either way, us or the state would then be appealing to the Second Circuit Court of Appeals in Manhattan. And I think there it's probably 50-50 what happens with it. If we get split circuits, we actually help Rode then get into the Supreme Court. Or if they are declined, but then we come through, then we've got the split circuit. So there was a lot of betting last weekend on Super Bowl 60. I would say that the odds makers in Vegas would be saying that between New York and California, one or the other or both of us gets to the United States Supreme Court in either 2026 or early 2027. And I think at that point, the result is clear. Under Bruin, the government has to show a historic antecedent or analog. In neither case have they shown any. In the California case, the judges reviewed more than 100 statutes submitted by the California Attorney General. Here in Gazzola, we just eviscerated 19 statutes provided by the New York Attorney General.
So with New York, I mean, you're obviously fighting on behalf of the FFLs, the gun dealers, the shops, and of course, anyone who wants to buy a semi-automatic firearm. I mean, they didn't even make semi-automatic firearms, you know, 200 years ago. So is that what the historic basis comes down to?
For the ammunition background check system, it's slightly different. You know, we have a really interesting 2023 decision out of the Second Circuit in the Gazzola case that created a precedent. Your firearm needs to be able to be not only accessed, but usable. And so the Second Circuit has already said you cannot ban ammunition. Our argument is that New York State does exactly that. The way the law reads, in New York, there is a ban on any commercial sales of ammunition unless that sale goes through either a state licensed dealer in firearms or your registered seller of ammunition. The dealer does the check of your government-issued identification. The dealer submits the background check to the New York State Police, and the New York State Police provides their unique identification number to approve the sale. It is a bigger ban, we argue, even than Heller or Bruin, which only, and I'm putting that word in quotation marks, only affected handgun users and owners. Ammunition affects everything. So our argument is that there really has never been a ban in the history of the United States that affected the operability of a firearm. They will not be able to overcome that argument. There is nothing comparable to what California and New York have done with the ammunition background check system.
Are there other states doing an ammunition background check system?
No.
No, just New York.
And California.
And California, right.
Yes. There are four other states that have a license card. Those are multi-year cards, similar to a concealed carry permit. We do not consider that comparable to a background check system on every single transaction.
You're talking with a lot of FFL dealers. I'm sorry. What are they saying about this now? I mean, this has been since 2024, correct? When they brought in the background check, or was it 2023 when they first implemented it? So since that time, they've been suffering. You know, people are obviously going to other states. They've cut back on their ammo purchases. I'm talking about the ammo specifically here, not the semi-automatics. But, I mean, what are you hearing from FFL dealers?
So let's just hit those dates quickly.
Yes,
the ammunition background registry actually started September 1st of 2022 under the Concealed Carry Improvements Act. As of that date, dealers were required to start a list at their cash register of any ammunition purchase. That statutory piece is still in effect. The background check system as a computer-based platform launched on September 13 of 2023.
That was like a year later. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So that just, you know, gives you a couple data points there. What the dealers are saying is that from go, people have refused to participate. Some people have enough stock probably to last them until the proper zombie apocalypse, right? So some are holding out for it to be struck down as unconstitutional. Some who have means go out of state. And then there is simply the fact that bad policy causes people to do things that they wouldn't otherwise do as a law-abiding citizen, such as exchange ammunition or give ammunition to each other so it's not a commercial sale. You know, that's sort of a workaround, if you will.
What we're really seeing, I mean, I'm hearing about stories about people. Well, and I can't confirm this, but I'm not going to mention the retailer, but there is one retailer that claims they lost over $1 million in ammo business.
Oh, I can believe it, right?
Western
New York.
I
can believe it. Yeah, we've got sales figures certainly for my clients and other of the witnesses, and some of that data has gone into submissions that we've made to the court starting last year on a cross motion that we filed in Gazola. It is bread and butter. It's the reason somebody pops in to grab a box because they're going out hunting for their once in a year excursion. It's somebody popping in to use a range. A number of the FFLs who have retail space also have a range. So you might have a local law enforcement officer who needs to certify where they're using their own firearm as their duty firearm, and they want to pop in during an hour lunchtime and get recertified, and they can't get through the ammunition background check fast enough to get it done. These are the kinds of frequent scenarios that the average New York resident is suffering from that just makes it such a clear case of an unconstitutional violation perpetuated by New York.
Anything else you want to say about this case?
Gazola versus Hochul, I could be on this entire interview with you for the rest of the day on it.
I guess before we get to the other cases.
So, you know, how to track this, I guess, is a question that people ask me often. The memorandum I just submitted, which is available on my website, you know, grab it, read it, take a look at it. It's part of a motion now at the lower court that the judge will probably make a decision on. Let's see, we are at February, call it June or July, probably before summer break. I also have pending in Gazola a motion on appeal to the Second Circuit. My brief is due there March 9th. I would look for a decision from the Second Circuit following oral arguments, maybe next September, October. These things take time. And I think that's probably what is frustrating, you know, not just New York outdoor newsers, but really everyone in New York is, you know, you get these questions, why can't you make this happen any faster? Well,
oh, absolutely.
You know, there's a process. And I will tell you that when I turn in, you know, as recently as a couple days ago, a brief to the Third Department Appellate Division in the state court, so only a mere 14,000 words, the amount of time that goes into a single brief that you are looking at that is fully annotated up to the minute, you know, somebody else's case gets a ruling, then you have to change an entire section of your brief, or you get a section drafted out and that doesn't really quite lead exactly where you wanted it to go. You've got to redo it. It is a surprise, even to me, this far into it on a more than full-time basis, just how many hours it takes to produce a single brief that goes into the court.
And of course, there's the court scheduling of whether it's the hearings or whatever. That always seems to be put out so far, you know, from,
I know,
like you're saying, 26, 27. And obviously that's not your fault, but that's what everybody, you're right. That's the yeah. question everybody asked me. Why does it take so long? Mm-hmm. And I've heard Tom King from the New York State Rifle and Pistol Association say so many mm-hmm. times, you just got to be patient. It's going to take
yes.
time. It's going to take time.
And I echo Tom's refrain, and I can sympathize because I'm not only a lawyer, but I also do quite a bit of creative writing. And so I suffer from that writer syndrome that I can take as long as I want to write something. But the minute I've handed it off to you, I expect you to read it in 3 seconds and give me your feedback. So, you know, for me too, you know, you sit sort of hitting refresh on your email when you think it should be about time for a decision to come in. I have 2 motion decisions in the Bowman case in federal court that I'm feeling like it should be time for those decisions to come in. And so you do sit on the edge of your seat because it has such a great impact to every person in our state. And it does feel like it's just an endless saga. here I am. The minute I submit my, you know, I want to say 5-star memorandum of law concerning the ammunition background check system and the SAR license, you know, 3 seconds later, there's Governor Kathy Hochul at the podium screaming about the newest bill and they're going to ban a Glock. And, you know, and we all are then emailing each other, the plaintiffs and I, you know, is there any point in doing this? There's just another next law. Maybe you live with the devil that you know, as opposed to the next one. But this is the enduring struggle for American civil rights, not only for the Second Amendment, but for all rights. So it's perpetual, the fight to defend the Bill of Rights, the fight to defend the U.S. Constitution, and it's worth fighting.
Let's talk more about some of these other cases when we come back right after this.
There's a great program available for youth who love to hunt and fish. It's called the Outdoor News Junior Pro Team, and any youth 18 or under can join for free at jrproteam.com. JPT program showcases useful videos and tips to help encourage the next generation to become stronger anglers and hunters. It's a platform to celebrate and inspire those outdoor-loving youth. Check out the photos of Outdoor News Junior Pro Team members on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and YouTube, and visit our jrproteam.com for more information.
Welcome back to the Great Northeast Podcast. I'm Dan Ladd, editor of New York Outdoor News. We've got attorney Paloma Capanna with us. She's down in North Carolina, and she's braising the weather down there just like we've been braising the cold up here. But there's a lot happening here, Paloma, and you released a Arms Under Fire publication. You call Arms Under Fire the second edition of the Handbook to Risk Mitigation for the New York Concealed Carry Improvements Act. And in there you talked about 4 cases. The lead cases, the review dates and such. I'd just like to bring listeners up to date with them, what they are, what they seek to accomplish, and maybe what you know about where they're at. And let me start with Antonia versus James. Now, that is the one, the good moral character, correct?
So Antonia has a number of components to it, including several of the sensitive place locations where we have a partial preliminary injunction. The case has gone silent because the case is in discovery. That's when a case sort of disappears from public view and the lawyers are exchanging documents. They might be doing some depositions. They might be working with potential expert witnesses. And what I can tell you, because I get into the PACER federal system and I periodically will click on these cases to check all the updates, I can tell you that Antoniuk should be coming to the end of its discovery period. We're now sort of in mid-February, and you should see it reemerge probably in the form of competing motions for summary judgment, where basically the attorneys will motion the court and say, listen, the facts are not in dispute here. What we need is a judicial interpretation of the law. So look for that to happen, I would expect, before the summer. And that will be back in front of Judge Sotheby in the Northern District Court, probably on cross motions for summary judgment.
And if he was to rule in favor of plaintiffs for that, now that would only apply to that district?
Technically, that is correct. It then informs the other districts, but does not bind them. The Northern District is the largest geographic district of the state. So we like to think that North Country is, you know, huge and very influential for the rest of the state. We simply have a very small full-time population.
Correct. And I'm one of those small full-time populators. Hardaway versus James, and what you call Spencer versus Bruin in your book, is that Spencer versus Negrelli? Is that the same case, different name? I believe they both have to do with houses of worship.
Well, all of these cases have actually been through 4 different defendants because the defendant will automatically change as the superintendent of state police changes. So they've actually all been, you know, versus Bruin, versus Negrelli, versus Chumento. Everybody forgets that little phase. And then versus James, which is actually Stephen James, the current superintendent of the New York State Police, not Letitia James, the New York Attorney General. So in terms of Spencer and in terms of Hardaway, yes, you dealt with successful challenges to houses of worship that were very specific as applied outcomes to the congregations so represented. It cost the state a lot. They ended up paying out over more than $1 million in attorney's fees and costs just for those two cases. So if I circle back for a minute to Anton Yerk, if the plaintiffs there prevail on a motion for summary judgment, I would expect it to have also $1 million plus in terms of an attorney fee award as the prevailing party. This could really start to add up against the state of New York. And of course, attorney fee awards are designed to deter the state from repetitively engaging in unconstitutional behavior. It's also designed, and I thought Judge Sinatra did an amazing decision on the Spencer Fee Award. You know, it's also designed to attract attorneys to work in this field. It's difficult to carry these big cases. It is not only time-consuming, it is all-consuming. When I was practicing just simply as a litigation attorney, I was generally carrying a 65-case load. And for the first 2.5 years of the Gazzola case, it was the only case that I carried, and I never had worked as many billable hours in my life. So the fact that now I have 6 cases with 11 plaintiffs, all completely interdependent of each other. I mean, the case is all spun exactly to create, you know, a cohesive whole to shine a spotlight on what the state of New York is doing. Really means that there's no nights, there's no weekends. I simply go from one deadline to the next.
Keeps you hopping.
It does. It really does. Yes.
So those cases have to do with house of worship, correct?
Yes. Now, yes. The one that you may not be touching on is Christian, which is interesting because I thought Christian would be the case that would actually get us flipped on the presumption that private property open to the public requires owner permission. So that's the way the law went in on the restricted places here in New York. But they actually got clocked at the gate by another case, Wolford versus Lopez out of Hawaii, where a comparable statute made it all the way to the United States Supreme Court first. Oral arguments were heard on Wolford just 2 weeks ago. I think the bench will come back. My guess is that it's a 7-2 bench in favor of the plaintiffs in the Wolford case. And if Wolford comes down in favor of those plaintiffs, it will, of course, bind the state of New York. Christian will then become the prevailing party, and they can go back to Judge Sinatra for the permanent injunction and the attorney fee award. That would also be thrilling. So, you know, 26 could turn out to be a good year for the New York issues.
And that's Christian versus James, correct?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that has to do with carrying in a public place for self-defense, if
private
I recall.
Private property open to the public. Private property open to the public, yes.
Okay.
Definitely the oral arguments in Wolford started to hint at where they might go if there was a case, private property not open to the public, and the presumption there. What's interesting about what Judge Sinatra did in Christian is that he basically took the New York statute on its face and split it into two subcategories that are not on the face of the statute. So the judges started somewhat spontaneously parsing out the private open to public and the private not open as two separate subcategories. It's going to make it tricky for you out there with concealed carry permits. It truly is. Because Dan, if you have my book in your hands, I mean, you can see I've got an alphabetical index in the book of the more than 100 restricted and sensitive places, exceptions and exemptions. In the state of New York.
Correct.
And you not only have to get your head wrapped around the diversity of locations to which these new laws apply, you then basically have to be me. You have to be up to the minute on what court in what jurisdiction has ruled on exactly which little subdivision on the day a given person gets arrested. I think that's why the New York State Police really haven't been arresting under the CCIA. And I'm not saying that to poke any fun at them at all. I'm saying because I don't know how briefed the officers even could be. So I suspect that we're not really seeing CCIA charges in New York because they focus on the crime at hand. You know, here's a person committing a crime with a handgun, no license, and that's the focus. And that should be the focus. If you're carrying concealed correctly, theoretically, you're not giving the officer any probable cause to frisk you. You're not flashing your firearm to the public in a menacing way. And who knows if you've actually stepped one foot across the line into somebody's front yard or not. So we're just not seeing any arrests under the CCIA.
I want to talk about the FFL dealers who were subpoenaed by Letitia James when we come back right after this.
Like every serious angler in this region, I want to make the most of my time on the water. That's why I read OutdoorNews.com. This all-new digital resource is loaded with valuable tips, lake profiles, up-to-date fishing reports, gear reviews, and breaking news on laws and regulations that affect the sports we love. Plus, OutdoorNews.com will help you catch more and bigger fish. Be prepared and get ahead of the crowd. Join OutdoorNews.com today.
Welcome back to the Great Northeast Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Ladd, editor of New York Outdoor News. We're catching up with Paloma Capanna. She is an attorney who has her hands in so many things that have to do with the Second Amendment here in New York, even though she's down in North Carolina right now enjoying, hopefully it gets warm for you down there, Paloma. But I know the last time we spoke, you had a case that was fairly new that involved a couple of North Country FFL dealers who had been subpoenaed by Attorney General Letitia James to supply certain records of firearms purchases, if I recall. Can you give us an update on what's happening with all that?
The cases that we're talking about are near and dear to my heart as an Adirondacks girl. Bowman's Gun Shop, up in Gouverneur, Blue Line Sports, and Woods and Waters in Saranac Lake. The three FFLs, separately of each other, received non-judicial subpoenas signed by an assistant New York Attorney General demanding production of records relative to how they were operating in particular aspects that relate to a new law from 2022. So not the CCIA, but a law that created New York General Business Law Section 875. And that's the new piece that impacts the operations on a day-to-day basis of state-licensed dealers in firearms. Tim Bowman tried to provide some information to the state of New York, tried to help out with what they simply said was an investigation. Didn't say it was into him. And then it turned out the investigation was, in fact, him. At that point, then he hires me, and we sort of go from there. Blue Line Sports and Woods and Waters, fortunately, when they received their subpoenas, already knew me or knew of me, and so contacted me immediately. All three dealers have progressed through New York State trial level decisions and are now on appeal to the third department with the questions of law. We were disappointed that both trial judges ruled in favor of the state. We do have arguments that the judges made mistakes of fact and made mistakes of law. And so here, you know, we were talking earlier about why does it take so long? Well, it takes so long because we are blessed in America to have an appellate system. So we can go from those trial judges where we disagree to the appellate department, where we will receive the benefit of five judges working on a panel and before whom I will have oral arguments to reverse the judgment below. In the meantime, Letitia James just couldn't hold her horses for the rulings. And she decided to sue Tim Bowman for enforcement and to issue a press release. This was July 18 of 2025. And that press release was full of false facts. And now she issues it from her office. It looks like he's already been convicted of criminal activity. It's false allegations of things from the past that don't even line up to the very papers that they serve upon us. And so Tim Bowman became the disruptor in the Second Amendment field. And in September 2025, we sued in federal court for libel per se and violations of civil rights on behalf of Tim Bowman against Letitia James, the assistant attorney generals who assisted in that case, the superintendent of New York State Police, and the New York State Police. It's the first case of its kind in the country to turn around and, as opposed to saying stand your ground, say move up the field. We need to retake the narrative. We need to help the public to understand the depth of lies that government officials put out. And the easiest example I can give you to back up my bold assertion is that when the state sued Tim, they had some exhibits that they stapled, physically stapled to the papers they served him that actually contradict what they say in their lawsuit. So they handed us the proof that they were lying. It's the most bizarre case I've ever seen.
And where is it at?
So we are in federal court, and the state made a motion to remand back to state court, which we, of course, oppose. We made a motion to disqualify the New York Attorney General's office from representing the New York State Police. Here's an interesting fact. In all of my cases over the last 3.5 years, we have made many arguments, including against individual officers of the New York State Police by name. Never once has the New York Attorney General submitted an affidavit from anybody in the New York State Police addressing any of these allegations. And we have 15 named officers in the cases. We don't even believe that the New York Attorney General's office is fully briefing the New York State Police on the magnitude of the claims that are being made against them. So it's going to be interesting to see what the judge rules. Again, this is a complete disruption of the rather passive approach that most of the Second Amendment litigation has taken since 2008's Heller decision. You know, this is really saying enough is enough.
Where does it end?
Well, hopefully it ends with a big judgment in favor of Tim Bowman into the millions of dollars and, you know, Letitia James having to issue an apology, right? We have to get to the point that the individual politicians who are feeding off of the anti-Second Amendment groups through endorsements and through campaign funds and publicity, the politicians must be driven back to the oath of office that they took and to the obligations that they owe to their constituents. I mean, this is the state's top prosecutor who, in North Carolina, has relatives who skipped bail. So you might imagine that North Carolina news views Albany politicians quite a bit differently than the New York press would want the public to believe. Down here, where law enforcement remains, the idea that the top prosecutor in the state of New York has family members who she has been harboring who skipped bail in North Carolina, she wouldn't get elected here.
Not all press.
That is correct.
As my hand goes up. Before we wrap up, is there anything you want folks to know? You've told them to be patient. We've updated the cases. What else? I guess one question I keep hearing, is there one decision that the Supreme Court could make that would just rule in the favor of gun owners in one or more of these cases and basically, you know, negate the defense almost immediately.
Well, they already issued it. It's NYSERPA versus
Bruin. It's the Bruin, right.
It's the Bruin case, right? And so you sort of, you see this in the Rahimi decision, which is, you know, the year after Bruin, and you really heard it a week ago in Lopez versus Wolford, where Justice Gorsuch and Justice Alito and Justice Kavanaugh, you know, they're literally just pulling their hair out. And Justice Thomas at one point is like, but I already said this, you know, and Justice Alito is like, what do you not understand? And Justice Gorsuch is saying, isn't that like garlic to a vampire? I mean, who's ever heard the U.S. Supreme Court judges talk like this? But that's how exasperated they are that they handed us NYSERPA versus Bruin. And they expected attorneys who are licensed to follow the law, or if you are going to oppose it, which you're permitted to do all day long, but you must give a basis. You must distinguish your case. And the other side is just bringing more and more rubbish. So the most recent rubbish argument that I had to combat in the Gazzola memo is the state of New York, the Attorney General's Office of the State of New York, is literally arguing on paper, read it with your own eyes, that the racist laws of the past are a basis for now restricting gun owners in New York.
I don't even dare ask what grounds.
Well, because there's laws doing restrictions in the past, and who cares why or whether that's constitutional today. It's our history as a nation to disarm people. So what's the difference if the state of New York today wants to disarm all gun owners? That's consistent with history and tradition. That's what we're up against this round. And I will tell you, the memo went out from Everytown, Giffords, and Brady. It's the same argument the Washington, D.C. attorney was making for Hawaii before the U.S. Supreme Court. It's the same argument Letitia James's office is making in Gazzola versus Hochul. And then they'll just pass out their next memo for their next argument. If you actually put yourself in the crow's nest and you start skimming across the cases like yours, what you see is a sitcom, because it's just a memo that's gone out from the anti-gunners who want nothing more than to take away your civil rights.
Incredible. Paloma, it's been great having you on. You're welcome anytime. Reach out to me anytime you want to update or talk, or come on the podcast, because I know whenever we talk Second Amendment stuff, especially these gun laws in New York, we always get a good branch of listeners that want to get caught up and want to know what's going on. So I hope you stayed warm down there. And thanks again for joining us.
And we'll see you soon in North Country.
Yes, you've been listening to the Great Northeast Podcast. I'm Dan Ladd, editor of New York Outdoor News. Hoping everybody's got a big fish on the ice. You're being safe on the ice. And, you're getting ready for the spring turkey season and warmer weather. Until the next time.
Missed a past episode of the New York Outdoor News Great Northeast Podcast? You can find previous programs at outdoornews.com or via your favorite podcast streaming platform. And for the rest of the story on the topics we cover on this program, get yourself a subscription to Outdoor News. Simply call 800-535-5191 or visit us at outdoornews.com. And don't forget to join us again here in 2 weeks to talk everything out of doors. Thanks for listening to the New York Outdoor News Great Northeast Podcast.